Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden. My co-host tonight is Emmy-nominated NBC legal and political analyst Dean Johnson. Dean?
Good evening, everyone. You know, in our past three episodes, we've asked, are the guardrails coming off? We've asked whether all those problems that make listening to the news a traumatic experience, like the pandemic, the insurrection, the great resignation, soaring crime rates, school shootings, police shootings, vigilante justice, flash mob thefts, homelessness, fights on airplanes, rampant drug addiction, are they a perfect storm of bad news? Or is there something else going on? Is there something deeper? And are all of these things connected? Are the social norms that once held our society together disintegrating? Jeff?
Tonight's episode is the finale of our series. In our first episode, UC Berkeley sociologist Andy Barlow and Amherst law political scientist Lawrence Douglas told us that people no longer believe in the rule of law. You told us you wanted to hear from people with boots on the ground, the powers that be. So in our second episode, we spoke with community activists and county prosecutors who talked about the need for a revival of the institutions that hold the guardrails in place. Family, church, school, the courts, and especially the community. Last week, we continued the conversation with political writer Mark Simon, Santa Clara County District Attorney Jeff Rosen, and City Council member Charles Stone. Dean?
This week, we wrap up our discussion with guests who are intimately familiar with the inner workings of politics, both locally and nationally. But as always, you, our listener, are our most important guest, and this is your chance to have your voice heard on the issues of the day.
Tonight, we want to extend our personal invitation for you to call in and share your thoughts. Give us a call. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, call us at 415-841-4134. 4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside the local area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And remember that just as a doctor can't diagnose your family member based on a phone call, our attorney guests can't provide you with legal advice about a particular case, but they're here to help.
So once again tonight, we have a terrific lineup. Mark Simon joins us for the second week in a row. Mark is a political writer who for nearly three decades has focused on the Bay Area. He currently writes for the San Mateo Daily Journal.
David Canepa is a county supervisor and immediate past president of the Board of Supervisors of the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors.
Emily Beach is a council member for the city of Burlingame and a former mayor of Burlingame. Prior to her election to office, she worked as a United States Army captain, business executive, and a nonprofit leader.
We invited Kevin Mullen, who couldn't attend. Assemblymember Mullen, Supervisor Canepa, and Councilmember Beach have all declared themselves candidates to succeed Representative Jackie Speer in the United States Congress. Also with us tonight, before serving as a deputy DA and then entering private practice, Jamal Anderson worked for a number of elected officials in Congress, including Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, Jackie Speer, and Gwen Moore, and served as a federal affairs advisor to the former mayor of Washington, D.C., Adrian Fenty. To all of our guests, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You know, Jeff, I think I'll start off the discussion tonight with a question that I've asked a couple of times on the air. And it goes something like this. You know, all of these problems that we just listed didn't start with the pandemic. This country has about 5% of the world's population, but it has about 25% of the world's resources. That means that per capita, we here in America have about five times the resources for every person that you find in your typical country. But right now, we lag behind the rest of the developed world in just about every metric that counts, whether it's education, healthcare, workers' compensation, in the area of any of social inequality, we are second only to Russia. Right now, we are fighting to preserve even our most basic democratic rights, like the right to vote. And so the question for the panel and anybody who cares to join in, join in. How did we get here and what do we do about it?
Well, I'll jump in first. And thank you, Dean and Jeff, for having us tonight. This is Emily. You know, I agree that we really are struggling in the country right now. And I feel like so much of the root cause of whether it's the anger, the toxicity, the inequality is really a wealth and income inequality problem in this country. The economy just isn't working for everyday Americans. And that's something where it's a question of priorities and our tax structure. It's a question of how can we commit as the only, you know, modern world nation that hasn't committed to universal health care for our people. We need to do better for Americans. And I think that's going to be an important part of the conversation in not only this particular congressional election, but all elections happening across the country in 2022.
I don't know if anybody else has lined up to jump in, but let me do a follow-up on that. You know, we look at countries such as China, which is building bridges and roads. We have the largest economy in the world, and we can't keep our freeways up and running. Streets around town are torn up. Our bridges are crumbling. And yet, we have a much bigger economy than virtually anyone. Why is it we can't get things up and running and get stuff done? Mark, you look like you have something insightful to throw in here.
Well, I, you know, in addition to being a journalist, I worked for 15 years for Santos and Caltrain, and was remember being at a meeting with Google and Facebook when they wanted to know why the carpool lane project on 101 was going to take 7 years. It should take a year and a half. And I said, well, if you introduce a product and it doesn't work, you introduce another one. If we build this project and it doesn't work, we don't have another option to go to. We all have to leave the country. And also, China doesn't have to do environmental impact reports. No one can sue them if they don't like the, you know, China's famous for this. We're going to go here now. Everybody better move because we're coming here now. So it's some of it is simply that we make it easy for people to object. And there's something to be said for allowing people to raise their concerns and having to go through a process. It's a standard complaint that it takes too long. But the other thing to remember about these projects is that it's the public's money. They have some right to have a voice in how it's spent and whether or not it's spent properly.
But, you know, Mark, following up on that, you're tempted to say there's an authoritarian advantage, that China can just make people do stuff. But the truth is, it can be done in any type of government. I mean, China has raised something like 300 million people above the poverty line, but so has India. And from a standpoint of political sociology, India shouldn't even be a workable democracy. I mean, they've got something like 60 different languages and 200 different parties, but they still manage to get the job done. I'd like to ask our two candidates for national office, you know, why can they get the job done and why can't we get the job done? And if you are lucky enough to be elected, and by the way, I admire your courage in going to what may be the most offensive workplace environment in the world. But if you're elected to the United States Congress, what do you do on that first day? I mean, nuts and bolts. How do you make this work?
Look, Dean, Washington and Sacramento, make no mistake about it, it's broken. The system is broken. All the issues that you put forward, if China and India are taking leadership, we need leadership to move forward and to do those things. Let me give you an example. In the pandemic, San Mateo County has led. We've these disparities. You take Wi-Fi, for example. Wi-Fi should be accessible for the kid who lives in Hillsborough, but you better make sure that Wi-Fi is accessible for the kid who lives in East Palo Alto and Daly City. What this country has failed to do, and let me tell you this, my father was a chauffeur, my mom worked as a bank manager. They owned a home on a salary. You can't do that here in San Mateo County. I have friends who grew up here. They can't afford to live here. We need to change the system. The system is broke. What we've been able to do in San Mateo County is to make sure, whether it's leading the country in vaccinations, whether it's leading the country in all these areas, the disparities have grown so far. In America, we all say we start equal. That's a false narrative. We have people who fall behind, and it's incumbent on government to make sure that we support people no matter what zip code they live in. And let me just close by saying this. In the state of California right now, there are 150,000 people that are homeless. In San Mateo County, within 4 years, we'll get to functional zero. And you know why? Because we prioritized housing as a value. We prioritized making sure that the unhoused goes housed. But that's why DC and Washington are broke. This country needs healing. It needs it now. And it needs to put people first. And if we don't do that, that's why we're behind. And so these investments we make now will help us in the future. The problem is our elected officials in both Sacramento and Washington have neglected us. And because they've neglected us, the middle class has basically disappeared.
Emily, feel free to jump right in, but then I've got a follow-up.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. And I appreciate David's, you know, perspective. And certainly, I think I revere local government. It's been such an honor to serve as a mayor and now in my seventh year on city council. I think what we do locally here in San Mateo County in terms of land use decisions, leading into housing, leading into good policies to make sure people are taken care of is exemplary. But I do want to get back to your question about the infrastructure, because I do think it's a very good one. Like, how do we begin to improve the infrastructure in this country? And I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. Thank goodness we finally passed. Well, we did. The Congress passed and the president signed a major infrastructure bill. We still have more to do. That's going to help, because we absolutely need federal funds to help the local jurisdictions do what we do best, which is build the trains, build the road, fix the roadways, make sure the bridges are safe. I'm super proud of San Mateo County, because what we've done locally is we've prioritized those investments over the course of the last 30 years. The residents, the people of San Mateo County have said, yes, we're going to do a half cent sales tax. I chaired the San Mateo County Transportation Authority for the past 2 years. That's over $3 billion of local infrastructure investments that we put our own tax dollars in locally, and then we go seek matching state and federal funds. So I have a front row seat to how important those funds have been to save Caltrain, to build grade separations, to make sure we're fixing 101 and creating a more functional 101 that's going to be better and less congested and quite frankly, more equitable. But we need the federal government to help. And I think those of us who have been on the ground at local government will certainly prioritize infrastructure investments, because that's where the rubber meets the road here locally.
And Jamal, let me turn it to you for a minute, because you've heard two of our guests talk about how local government gets things done and how they interact when money comes from Congress. Somebody, hopefully one of our guests tonight, is in store for a comeuppance on day one when they get to Congress. Tell them a little bit about how the sausage is made there and what they have to expect.
Well, I think David and Emily are certainly very experienced, elected officials, and I think have a good understanding of the legislative process. So I won't go into all of the details. Washington is a fascinating and often dysfunctional place, and so I won't spoil anything for them on that front. But let me get back to the question that Dean asked, which I think is certainly relevant, which really had to do with how we got here. And I think it's certainly important to kind of talk about that. We could spend years sort of discussing that. But as it relates to the pandemic, one of the things that the pandemic has done is it has, in a lot of ways, rendered the invisible visible. We have seen so many issues come to the fore that didn't just start with the pandemic. Issues in terms of the unhoused population and education and criminal justice reform. And so one of the things that we have to do as we figure out how to move forward is we have to remember the past. Today is a really important day to think about where we are as the United States Senate is debating whether or not to figure out how to protect people's right to vote. The Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965, and here we are some 60 years later, still discussing that. And so what it means is that we need to focus on, and I would submit that our elected officials and those who want to seek higher office, we need to really sort of drill down on those bread and butter issues that people are focused on. I'm sure people are concerned about what China and India are doing, but I think a lot of people are more concerned about whether or not they're going to be able to put food on the table, whether or not their kids are going to be able to stay in school because of the issues with COVID, whether they're going to find a new job if they've chosen to leave their old job, whether their relatives are going to be safe in their neighborhoods from police violence. And so we really cannot forget that from the very founding of this country, things have not always been equal for everyone. COVID has certainly impacted everyone, but it has not impacted everyone equally. And as we move out of this pandemic, which we're still experiencing, I think it's incumbent on our elected officials and those who frankly work outside of government to really address those root problems that have been highlighted by the pandemic so that we can move forward in a more equitable and just way.
Yeah, let me put a really fine point on it. And we were talking about this before the show. San Mateo is very different from Washington, D.C. In San Mateo, you really can get things done. And both Emily and David know that, and they've done that for years. When one of you possibly gets to Washington and sits down in your seat in Congress, you're going to be looking at some people who literally live in an alternative universe. And the chances are, by the time you get there, they're going to be in the majority. So when you look across the table at a Marjorie Taylor Greene, and you say, gee, we've got to get something done about climate change or infrastructure or voting rights. And she looks back at you and says, but David or Emily, there's no such thing as climate change. You've been listening to fake news out there in California. Now what do you do? How do you get across the aisle?
Well, look, I think, Dean, when Marjorie Taylor Greene came to San Mateo County, we told her we didn't want Marjorie Taylor Greene there because of the lies that she espoused. Now, you contrast that against moderate Republicans and look at Liz Cheney and her position on the insurrection that took place. You have to identify partners that you can work with, right? You have to identify partners. There are some people that you can't work with because of your principles and what you believe. You have to be true to who you are as a person. But I've had the ability, you know, whether it's on the city council, whether it's on the board of supervisors, to work with an array of different people, but not at the expense of principles. And when we talk about a woman's right to choose, a woman's right or abortion, that's something to me that's non-negotiable. So there are certain things that I'm not going to agree with the Republican Party. Abortion is one of them. Community college for all. We talk about upward mobility for a middle class. San Mateo County is doing community college for all with our community college district, making sure that we have people, giving people an opportunity. I hope if I'm elected to Congress that we're able to do community college throughout the United States. And so there are people that you're not going to be able to work with, Dean, but there are going to be other people that you may be able to work with. But you have to stay true to your values, and you have to stay true to your constituents. And that's what, you know, I'm going to do if elected to Congress.
Isn't that, you know, it's funny.
Let me jump in here. Isn't that the issue? Isn't that the problem? I mean, you can say you're not going to work with Marjorie Taylor Greene all you want to until she's chair of the committee you've been assigned to.
Yeah.
And you're going to sit there and watch her ignore you completely. I mean, it's fine to say, I'm not going to work with the people I don't agree with. That's going to be more than half of Congress. Are you saying basically that's it? I'm not going to work with those people?
Mark, you're on the panel, not an interviewist, but I will answer your question.
I'm sorry, David, if you didn't like the way I asked the question.
Let me answer your question. I know Assemblymember Mullen couldn't be here tonight, but I'm glad you're here in his place. The point being.
Excuse me a second. Wait a second.
Hold on one second.
Oh, no, just a second.
The point,
you know, that's not why I'm here.
The point,
you
know, being, you, or wait a second. Your question.
Wait a second, because you're throwing out a bunch
of cards. Okay, one at a time, guys.
Mark, yeah. Let me answer your question. Slow down, Mark.
No, slow down.
Gentlemen, let's move on. Like when somebody my size steps on a scale, we get a little note back that says one at a time, please. We have to go to one at a time, please.
Excuse me, Jeff. I'm not going to sit here and let him accuse me of representing Assemblyman Mullen. It's nonsense. He knows it. He should know better than to say something like that. I'm here as a journalist. I'm not here with your approval or your disapproval. And you need to move on from that nonsense. If there's a point you want to make, why don't you make that instead of throwing personal insults at me?
Okay, thank you, Mark. I appreciate your feedback. What I'm saying, basically, Mark, is I do have the ability, and Mark and I have been friends for 20 years. Look, at the end of the day, Mark, you know me better than anyone. I can work with anyone. But there are some people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. The Republican Party can't even work with Marjorie Taylor Greene, Mark, and you know that. And so I will have the ability to work with others, but Marjorie Taylor Greene, who basically has said that the vaccine does not work and is been banned from Twitter, that's someone I can't work with, Mark, and I appreciate the question.
I'd like to respond to that a little bit, too, because I think that's a really important question you asked, Dean. I think one of the most important things that I bring to the table as a candidate is having lived all around the world, having lived in every corner of this country, understanding the subcultures of this nation. Look, I was a United States Army officer. There is no more diverse employer in the world. I've trained in Kentucky, Georgia, South Carolina. I grew up in New England. I was educated at the University of Notre Dame in the heartland of the religious right, Indiana, right? I've lived in Texas for the better part of 3 years as an Army officer. I've led a Patriot missile battery in Saudi Arabia. I've worked for 13 months in Korea, and I've lived in Europe for over a year. I understand how to work with people from all walks of life. I do think when, and I couldn't agree more with David, we have to find common ground, even with people, certainly not on our key principles like preserving our democracy. There is no space to negotiate with insurrectionists. Let's make that clear. But we have to find common ground. If we can't agree on the hot button issues, where can we find common ground? And I do think sending a member of the California delegation who's worn the uniform of the United States military, who's jumped out of airplanes as an Army airborne paratrooper, can actually maybe earn some respect from some of the right-wing folks who at least admire veterans. David brought up the issue of a woman's right to choose. Look, I'm Roman Catholic. I'm staunchly pro-choice. I'm a University of Notre Dame graduate. In fact, Judge Barrett's husband used to hang out in my dorm down the hall with friends. We were there about the same time. Look, I disagree passionately with the Catholic Church on a women's right to choose, but I think my presence in Congress trying to make sure that we codify Roe v. Wade and a voice of a woman in that equation is a very powerful one. And I think we need coalition builders that have really broad life experience to be able to relate to people from all walks of life and who have lived experience with some of these most important pressing issues really bring something valuable to the table where we can find common ground and agree on things like, be it infrastructure, paid parental leave. Let's talk about making sure people have proper health care.
Okay, let me take a step. Let me jump in for a minute. First, I want to pass a respectful note on to both of the candidates that are here. The show is really not intended for you to campaign against one another on tonight's show. I think we all agree that those points where you differ are probably much smaller than what you share in common. But we were really talking about issues that we all participate in. This is week four of a show that's really not a campaign show per se. We're talking about some of the problems, some of the divisions that are taking place. We can't get people sitting together. Let me change direction a little bit and add another element to it. You know, people who used to look forward to going to the city are now talking about seeing people shooting up and defecating in the streets of cities such as San Francisco or Los Angeles. Violent crime is rampant throughout the major cities, not just those in the Bay Area, but beyond. You know, we complain about BART and how people are either shooting up or smoking crack or even defecating in the streetcars while people are there. New York has just had a rash of people being pushed off the subway platforms in front of moving cars. It rises to a different level. Los Angeles is having similar problems. What in the world is behind all this? When did it start? And what can we do about some of these things?
I'm happy to jump in. I think we have to look at the root cause of some of these tragedies in terms of addiction, in terms of mental health. I think as a state, we haven't done a particularly good job of really paying attention to those issues. The number of mental health beds in the state has been declining. We're trying to make amends now, but really over the last 40 years. And, you know, these are some issues that are at the root cause of some of these problems. And we've got to make sure we've got appropriate resources for our community members so that we can pull out of these dangerous situations that make all of us feel dangerous. And they impact all of our quality of life when they exist in our communities. I'll pause there.
I would add, first and foremost, as a very proud resident of San Francisco, that San Francisco has been in the past and continues to be a great city. Like many big cities across the country, you know, San Francisco is facing a lot of issues, whether it involves crime or homelessness. But the leadership of San Francisco on the whole, I think, is trying to wrap its mind around what's going on and trying to move forward. That being said, you know, in previous weeks on the show, there has been this question about whether we need to return to institutions. And I think one of the issues that's relative to your question, Jeff, is the fact that perhaps the institutions simply aren't working, or at least maybe they are working, but only working for a select few people. And so what the pandemic has showed us is that there are some people who've been able to weather the storm perfectly fine, and there are others who are not, who are out of a job, out of a house, who perhaps are turning to crime or addiction or having mental health issues. And so, you know, to the point that Emily made, yeah, we need to focus on the root causes. And I think in addition to that, I think we have to take a deep breath and we have to start doing a better job of seeing each other as opposed to othering other people and saying, oh, well, I live in San Mateo County and I don't want to go to the city anymore because people are going to the bathroom on the street and we get it. But we are in this together and we need to continue to see each other as neighbors, as brothers and sisters. And instead of complaining about those problems, start figuring out what are the solutions to get people off the street, to get them the services that they need so that we can make a better city, not just for the people who live here now, but for the people who are going to live here 20 years from now.
As our guest brought up in the last couple of weeks, that means circling back and shoring up the institutions that really help support everybody and create those guardrails. We spoke to Damone Hale, who was here talking about getting young people working with the coaches who in turn have some street cred themselves and actually know how to keep people on track. We'll come back to this point in just a minute. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
This is 91.7 KALW and online at KALW.org. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616. Or visit sfbar.org for more information.
And we heard from Jamal Anderson. We heard from Emily. We didn't give you a chance to respond, David. Do you want to jump in?
I would say the media plays a big part in this in terms of the sensationalism that takes place. So we have to be cognizant and aware of that. And look, if you have people who are unhoused and you're not providing services, mental health, if you're not providing beds to people, we can't expect them to thrive. And so I think a big issue we talk about crime is how important it is for those retailers to really monitor themselves, right? And so it's easy to blame cities. It's easy to blame local government. But those retailers have an obligation to step up and step in with the policies, you know, whether it's, you know, to protect themselves as well. And I think everyone's looking at local government to come with a solution to this, and we should. But if we don't provide people with upward mobility and upward access. And if people are trying, I've been food insecure. I know what it's like to be hungry one time in my life and what thoughts go through your head and what you may want to do. You may have not done that if you weren't without food or without housing. So we need to double down, make sure that we get first housing is key. You have to get someone housed first. We focused on the housing piece, and we're doing that in San Mateo County, trying to get the functional zero. Better outcomes will happen. And of course, you need those wraparound services that go with it, whether it's mental health, whether it's drug counseling, alcohol counseling. They don't work separate. But if you don't have a place for people to live, that's a big, big issue. And so we need to stay focused on that as a focal point.
Let me turn it over to Tamika from El Sobrante. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi. Can you guys hear me?
We can, and you're on the air. Welcome.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Hi, guys. I'm a physician, and I work with patients in the ER, so I'm closely tied to the substance abuse issues and homelessness that's happening here in the Bay Area. And, you know, one point that I really want to put out there is that this is an organic brain disorder, and we cannot expect these people to make the right decisions, right? And the fact that we offer people, services rather than, frankly, compelling services, we will never actually solve this problem if we keep having a plate of things that people can choose from when, in fact, they don't have the ability to make the choice that's best for them, right? So as I know we're a place where we love human rights and the autonomy, but, you have to have the capacity to make these decisions. And the fact is that, everyone's actions impacts other people. And, I feel like sometimes we get so focused on rights that we forget that there's responsibility. And I'm not talking individual responsibility, pick yourself up with the bootstraps. I'm talking about the social responsibility we have to each other and to our community and to our public spaces. And we can't sacrifice that because of an individual person's autonomy, especially when they're not biologically, physically capable of making those decisions because of the damage that's been done to their brain. So I just want to throw that out there. And So thank you for listening.
Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Tamika brings up a good point. We're letting people make the choice when perhaps they're not able to make the choice. We're giving them a lot of autonomy at the expense often of their survival. One of the things that has been talked of in recent times in the media for the first time that I can recall is an interest in conservatorships and whether that might be a way out. Historically, San Francisco as a city has been very reluctant to pull that trigger. They do so more in San Mateo County, a little less in Santa Clara, but certainly more than San Francisco. But what are your feelings on that? Is that a law that's due for reform, maybe for us as a community to take on more responsibility for people that aren't really able to take on that responsibility for themselves?
I'd like to change the scope of this a little bit because we've got so many people who are on our panel that know about the inner workings of politics. And I think every one of our panel members has used the phrase root cause. And we all agree that we need to get at the root cause of all of these problems, but nobody has yet named the root cause or said what they think it is. I know that if in terms of San Francisco, and we've discussed this before, there are economists like Thomas Piketty at the Paris School of Economics who talks about how the paradox of how great wealth creates great poverty. Our extraordinary success in the Bay Area has made things so expensive that people who were middle class are now, poor, and people who were on the edge, who were on the fault line, are now homeless. What, in the opinion of our panelists, and I put this to all four of you, what is the cause? Because we need to know the cause before we decide what the solution is.
I think there's several causes. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
I think one of the difficulties is wanting to see these as binary problems. I'm old enough to remember when Governor Reagan closed the state mental health facilities and dumped a bunch of people on the streets. I was at San Jose State at the time, He put them all in board and care homes right along the campus, gave them drugs up the wazoo, and they sat there like zombies until their time and their finances ran out, and they started wandering the streets. So there's that. There's a role the state was willing to play up until the Reagan administration. Now, that's 60 years ago, so we have not been playing that role for a long time. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we didn't get here overnight. It has been a combination of decisions that were made or not made that I think, and part of the problem is that we face a public that's impatient, that is not interested in complex solutions to complex problems. And so one of the issues, one of the challenges for future leaders of the government, it seems to me, is how do you build a long-term support for long-term solutions?
We have another caller. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You can answer, Emily.
I was just going to say I agree with Mark. So much of what we deal with in government is really complex stuff, and it's so much easier, as we say, to sell ice cream than it is salad. And sometimes it's easier to do a soundbite than to really have a complicated solution. But we've got to solve for complex problems with multi-pronged solutions. I don't want to steal the air here if you've got another question.
Hey, Dean, I think one of the big issues when you look at union membership in this country has dropped precipitously. Right now, this country, we're at 10%. When you look at sort of where we were when we were booming as a country, union membership was much, much higher. What does that mean? Well, you have the haves and the have-nots. In the Bay Area, you have to have a certain skill set. What is that certain skill set? You got to be in tech. You got to be in, biotech. These high-paying jobs, what's happening is they're displacing not only just people on the lower end of the spectrum, they're displacing middle-class jobs. So give you an example. Take, for example, a firefighter. A firefighter can't live and buy a home in this area. In my city, which is the most affordable city in San Mateo County, one of them, the average home is $1.2 million. Now, you take the county as a whole, it's $2.5 million. So now you have a problem with the haves, right, and the have-nots. And then you have service workers, because they're not paid a living wage, they don't have retirement, they don't have health care. That's the difference. Now you contrast that 30, 40 years ago, you had a thriving Bay Area. There may have not have been much wealth, but there were people middle class. And how do I know this? Because I lived it. My parents owned their home. Again, my dad was a chauffeur. My mom was a bank manager. They had jobs at Bank of America. Nowadays, you couldn't even live anywhere in the Bay Area with those jobs. And so that's where the displacement has taken place.
I totally agree with David, and what I started kind of this whole conversation tonight is wealth and income inequality are a major problem. The union movement is one of the best solutions. We need housing for all levels in the economy. We need healthcare for everybody. We need a better tax structure, and we need education. I'd love to talk about how we need to do investments in education.
You know, a lot of sociologists are saying that the great resignation that we're experiencing right now may be like a long overdue general strike. Would you agree that unions institutionalize those disputes over wages, hours, and working conditions, and we lost that? If you go to Congress, are you going to be arguing for stronger labor laws, for better opportunities for unionization? And are we going to go after big tech for resisting unionization, which they've done tooth and nail?
Well, look, I mean, Dean, look at Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos and his wealth, and then you contrast that in how he treats his workers, that's inequitable. That's inequity. That's inequity.
Or Starbucks, which vigorously resisted unionization without success.
Yeah.
So what do we do about that? What do we do to bring back the union movement?
Well, what you got to do is you need people who are courageous and they're able to speak the truth to power to that issue. The problem is what happens with some in D.C., they get a taste of that D.C. air, and they're working for the lobbyists and they're working for the PACs instead of working for the people. And that's got to change. And that's why you see within the Democratic Party, that's why you see AOC. That's why you see Rashida Tlaib. People are fed up. They're tired. They're tired because they haven't seen change in their own lives. And that's where, you know, the disdain for government is coming from. Their jobs. They see that their lives aren't getting better. And that's got to change. And we got to make sure that we fight for, you know, so that people can have a great quality of life. Right now, they don't have it. They're working extra hours and they can't even pay the rent.
Jamal, you had something to add here, and you've been trying to get in on the conversation. By all means.
Sorry. I just want to go back to Dean's original question about root causes. And, you know, one of the things that has been mentioned is inequity. And it's not just inequity in terms of money, but we should be very clear that we're also dealing with long-term inequity based on race and gender and sexual orientation and identity. You look at the conversation about voting rights today, what states are doing to suppress the vote. You know, we are on the heels of this, what was to have been a national conversation about race and racial inequity and inequality following the murder of George Floyd. And it barely merits a mention on the news today. It's barely something that people continue to talk about as if hundreds of years of inequity and discrimination is simply going to go away. And so to David's point and Emily's point as well, we do need people to speak truth to power. We do need people who are going to remember our past, that we are not through with people being discriminated against based on who they are or where they live. And we need to focus on the issues like the fact that where a kid is born based on their zip code is likely to determine their educational outcomes and opportunities. And so we need our elected officials like Emily and David and others to focus on those issues. Those are the root causes that have led to many of the issues that we see today in terms of educational outcomes, in terms of crime. And unless we focus more so on those issues than, you know, your random billionaire who, yes, should pay their taxes, we've got a long way to go here.
Let me turn it over to Fred from San Mateo. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks, Jeff. As a somewhat young person who doesn't relate to, like, or trust either of the main political parties, I'd like to get your guests' advice on how they think someone like I should go about best participating in the political process without joining either party. Thank you.
Well, let me just lay a little groundwork first. The good news is in California, you don't have to join a political party. You can declare no party preference, which allows you also to participate in some of the political primaries. I'll leave it to the others to say something more, except to say you got to show up.
I was just going to say that. Democracy is about showing up, Mark. Couldn't agree more. And there's so many opportunities, particularly at the local level, to show up and engage. And it's those kind of values we learn serving in local government that keeps us close to our constituents and the people that we're serving, and learning and listening and hearing about the issues. It doesn't matter what your party affiliation is. It's how are these policies impacting your life?
Yeah, and I agree with Emily. Your voice matters. And so how you weigh in, the discourse that takes place, having the proverbial public town square, all voices should be heard, even the voices I may not agree with, right? Even the voices, they may not agree with my voice. But with discourse and the way we talk, that's a thriving democracy, and having those conversations. And they may be difficult conversations, but they're conversations that we must have. We can't go into our own little corners and just not communicate whatsoever. We have to come together and try to build consensus. And you're an independent, you had said. That's great. You know what? Our party, the Democratic Party, needs to reach out to you and speak to you and understand what we can do to make sure that our party is a big tent and you're a part of that discussion as well.
David, one of our callers wrote in moments ago and commented about your statement regarding Tlaib and AOC, and is concerned that you are speaking as, well, I'll let you tell us, are you saying that you support their worldviews and their what their policies are? Or are you commenting that bringing in people that the media and many of us see as more extremes, more on the extreme side, is a symptom of the other things we've been talking about?
I wouldn't say they're extreme. I would say that they have a viewpoint, right? And their viewpoint should be respected, whether it's fighting for living wage, whether it's fighting for LGBTQ+, whether it's calling out discrimination. Their views, I think, are shared by a lot of people. I think the reason why people pick on them is because they're women and they're women of color, and that's wrong. We should always, always, always celebrate young people and others who are involved and engaged in politics, not chastise them.
No, I'm wondering if we're not missing a lot of opportunities here to reach across the aisle and to reach across viewpoints. I was thinking about the question that we posed to our listeners, you know, what would you do on your first day in office? And I've talked a lot about how I correspond with my relatives in red states, and you get experienced at talking to people with different viewpoints. For example, I had a discussion the other day, and you can comment on this if you want, with somebody who was very, very pro-life, part of the Trump base. And I said, look, if you're pro-life, if you're so concerned about the lives of children, shouldn't you also be in favor of universal health care? Because that's the one thing that reduces the infant mortality rate. And he replied, no, America's great. We're first in infant mortality. And I had to explain to him that being first in infant mortality is not a good thing. But eventually he got the point. Are we missing those opportunities? And what kind of opportunities like that do you see if and when you go to Congress?
I think we are missing those opportunities because we're so busy as a nation screaming at one another that we're not listening anymore. And you know, one of the things I'm talking about in this campaign, a lot of civility. We've got to get that back, and we've got to understand that we might not agree on some of those hot button issues, but where can we agree? Where can we find that common ground and be able to do exactly what you did? Again, you know, talk to folks that are maybe on the right hand side of the aisle, super pro-life. I think you brought up a great point about the universal health care. What about the death penalty if you're pro-life? Shouldn't you think about thinking twice about executing folks on death row? When, you know, certainly there's so much data that suggests that people who can't afford the right lawyers or the right legal team are disproportionately affected by that. So I do think that those kind of conversations probably happen. Maybe Jamal could talk with us more how they happen in Congress. From what I've heard and read, it seems that many of those conversations used to happen more frequently, but even the insurrection has just brought so much animosity because our democracy was so threatened. But we've got to find ways to never compromise on our core values, but find ways to relate to one another, to see the humanity in one another, and eventually make the progress. The progress is going to get made. We need voices on all sides. And we need voices who are more extreme in conversations, but then the progress is going to be made in the middle for how we can hammer out moving the needle, hopefully more in the direction of our Bay Area values.
Yeah, I would add to that. You know, certainly we send people to Washington and Sacramento when we elect local leaders to get things done. And I think in a lot of ways, local government is great because you, in some instances, have a bit less partisanship because you're dealing with bread and butter issues. People need to, you know, get snow off the road and do all sorts of things that don't require hyper-partisanship. And so, yes, find common ground where you can, but let's not sort of fall for this myth of bipartisanship for bipartisanship's sake. You know, Senator Warnock was on the floor earlier this evening talking about the voting rights bill, which went down to defeat a little earlier, unsurprisingly. And, you know, he said, who is being asked to foot the bill for this mythical bipartisanship? You look at an issue like voting rights, where you have two United senators, of course, setting aside the Republican members of the Senate who won't vote for it, but at least two Democratic senators who sort of play up this issue of bipartisanship as a reason for not supporting changes to the filibuster. But at what cost? you know, so that voters can't get a cup of water when they're in line to vote in Georgia, so that folks in Arizona can't figure out a way to register early or register on the same day. And so to Emily's point, yes, you know, you have to figure out how to stick to your core values, to fight for those things that are worth fighting for. I think voters want their elected officials to fight for them. And I think, you know, for Emily and David and other folks seeking elected officials, you have to remember that power is fleeting. And voters send you to office to get things done, and they will very quickly rescind that invitation for you if you aren't able to deliver on the promises that you make. And so find common ground where you can, but really try to get things done for the American people.
But Jamal, isn't there a limit? I mean, you've spent 10 years watching the sausage being made. Isn't there a limit to how much of this change we can really do through federal legislation?
Well, sure. And I mean, that's why we have a system of state, local, and federal government. We should not sort of wed ourselves too closely to the idea that everything that's going to get done is going to be solved by what happens in Washington or Sacramento or even at the local level. We've got folks who need to do work in each of those arenas. And I would also add something that my former boss, Howard Dean, used to say on the campaign trail. We shouldn't always assume that government is going to solve all of our problems. There is a lot of work, and I would have said this to the earlier caller about political parties, there's a lot of work that can be done outside of government. And so we need people outside of government who work for nonprofits, who work in the private sector, to also be concerned about these issues like voting rights, like disparate pay for women and people of color, like criminal justice reform. We want our elected officials to focus on those issues, but we also need people outside of government to focus on them. And I think it's those folks working together and finding common ground. That is what is going to move us forward, because the legislative process is slow. It's cumbersome. And it can very quickly change depending on who is in office. And that can be frustrating to a lot of people.
And with that, we're really out of time. And I wanted to give each of you a chance for any last comments you have. Jamal, do you have anything you wanted to add to that? Take about a minute.
Well, I mean, I first of all, thank you for being here. And thanks to David and Emily and everyone else, you know, for throwing their hat in the ring. We need more people involved in public service, both at the local and state and federal level. I guess the only thing that I would add is that it is very easy right now to be disillusioned, I think, with government, generally speaking, with the state of affairs, frankly, given COVID and this pandemic that we're going through. And so to the extent possible, we have to try to have a bit of hope. We have to try to see the best in each other and really just try to do whatever it is we can do that is in our power to try to move this country, this state, this county, and this city forward. And so just try to have a bit of hope and really just take care of each other. That is the best that we can do, I think, in the moment. And vote.
Emily Beach, would you like to take about a minute?
Man, I don't know how anybody could say anything better than what Jamal just said, because he nailed it. I think we need hope. I think we need inspiration. I think we need relationship-centered change, and I do think we need to restore some trust. We need to restore some trust again in our institutions and our elected officials, and create an environment where we can continue to put the people first. And these are trying times. These are very, very dangerous times for our democracy. So I do think it's imperative that every person is paying attention to what's going on at the federal level, the state level, and certainly the local level, engaging. And I couldn't agree more. Just make sure you learn and about the issues, and we're out there and voting. And I think there's a lot of good work to be done and a lot of reason for hope as well. Thanks.
David Canepa, would you like to take about a minute?
Yeah, I just want to thank both you and Dean and the rest of the panelists. What we do today collectively and collaboratively, whether it's community leaders, whether it's elected officials, what we do today not only sets the tone for the future, but it's also dealing with these issues today. So we're talking about homelessness. We're talking about substance abuse. We're talking about these very issues that are so, so critical and so important. The only way we're going to get there is if we work together to solve them. We talked about the structural inequities whether it's around race, whether it's around income inequality. These are things that need to be solved. If we do not solve them, the gap between the rich and the poor, we've seen it, we're living through it, is only going to get bigger and bigger. And you're starting to see that with people who now live in campers, people who are living on our streets. We need to make sure it's about giving people a hand up. And as people, the collective good, it's our obligation to make sure that we leave no one behind, whether it's education, whether it's housing, whether it's food. And we need to make sure that we lift people up. And hopefully, as a nation, we'll be able to do that.
Mark Simon, would you like to take about a minute and a half?
Sure. You know, I want to come back to our caller. I think his name was Fred. I said the key is to show up. It takes time. It takes work. It takes showing up day after day. And if you look at the landmark pieces of legislation that have taken place in this country, it's taken years sometimes. Social Security, the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. It's easy to be cynical in these days. In fact, it's lazy to be cynical. And all I would say is not just show up, but keep showing up. Don't get discouraged and work at the most local level. You'll have success there. Both Emily and David have been on city councils. That's the closest government you can get to. And they will listen to you. And from there, you build things. The next thing you know, you find like-minded people who have a broader set of interests that share with you. There's a way to do this, but it takes time and it takes commitment. And that's a hard thing to do. It's easy for me to say. But that's really, to me, the answer. The pendulum will swing. It always does. But the question is whether or not you're going to be ready when it swings your way.
Dean Johnson, about a minute.
Yeah, I'd like to close with some good news. And here it is. We here in America have the resources to end poverty, ignorance, and disease to solve most of our social problems. There's one thing standing in our way, and that's a dysfunctional political system. And we can only hope that public-spirited people like Emily and David and Jamal and Mark get out there and do the work to change that system. But we, the people, have to be behind them. We have to ensure, we have to demand that they live up to the great power that we entrust in them. And the choice is ours. We can either build a shining city on a hill like no one has ever seen before, or we can continue a slide into a dystopian nightmare. It's up to us.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Our guests have been Attorney Jamal Anderson, David Canepa, board member and immediate past president of the San Mateo County Board of Supervisors, Emily Beach, council member and past mayor for the city of Burlingame, and political writer Mark Simon. Our final guest tonight has been all of you. Tonight's show is produced by Dean Johnson and yours truly. Next week, we move on from our discussion of have the guardrails come off, and we look to the rights your child may have. Thanks to my co-host, Dean Johnson, and to our guests for joining us in this enlightening conversation, and especially our thanks to all of you for listening in. And back at home, at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe, and have a good night.